Fantasy Focus is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways you can save. Happy Tuesday. It is April 11th. Field, Daniel, Stefania, and Mike all hanging out in the studio. Good to be together with everybody on this glorious Tuesday in Connecticut. It's finally nice out. We have been waiting for spring for so long. It is finally here. Not only that, but Odell Beckham Jr. finally has a team. How about spicing up your Easter Sunday a little bit, Stefania, with OBJ landing in Baltimore? It's kind of fun.
I know. I really appreciated him cutting into my Sunday night.
I know. Or else they're probably doing things with friends or family or acquaintances or whatever.
Or
right?
Watching, you know, Succession, but whatever.
Oh, yeah. That works too. Yeah.
Don't spoil it this time, Stefania.
Hey,
come on. I haven't seen it yet.
Well, you better get spoilers. On the mic because the internet's full of spoilers. But in any event, no spoiler here. OBJ going to the Ravens and... you know, obviously, one of the big questions is around his health, because the last we saw him was when he left the field after tearing his ACL in the Super Bowl in 2021. And that was not long after he tore it the first time, which was week 7 of 2020. Same knee. We talked about this a little bit on NFL Live yesterday. It's not the same as your run-of-the-mill ACL when you have a second injury. It's called a revision surgery. It's revision for a reason. You've done a surgery where you've implanted a graft, now you have to do it again. And the reasons that those typically don't do as well are numerous, including the fact that the knee just gets banged up a lot more. You have the potential for more cartilage damage, tougher to come back, longer recovery, etc. So when Odell didn't play at all last year, there was a lot of concern about what could he really be. I actually spoke with his surgeon, Dr. Neil Eletrash, who's also the team doctor for the Rams. So he's gotten to know him in the course of him being with the Rams and then operating on him again. And he said that actually his knee was in really good shape, very little damage. That's huge when it comes to career going forward. So that was number one. Number two, he had the best kind of graft you can have, patellar tendon graft. They took it from the opposite knee. So best kind of graft, knee in good shape. And then you tack on top of that the athlete that he is and the fact that he didn't play last year. Effectively made his rehab window a year and a half. So all those things bode very well for him as far as health.
I'm going to talk about a couple of things in a positive light because I have a general sense that perhaps the fantasy insight here will be a little bit more cold water than I think Ravens fans are probably hoping for. And then those who just want to have Odell Beckham Jr. back on their team this year, because for at least a few year stretch there, he was one of the most valuable players in all fantasy football. But Daniel, this move has injected some excitement into an offseason that has been downright dreadful in the court of public opinion for the Baltimore Ravens. Yep. Lamar Jackson remains a franchise tag player, although not technically under contract at this time. And Lamar Jackson was involved in the recruitment of Odell Beckham Jr. Lamar Jackson posted on Instagram a FaceTime photo of him and Odell Beckham Jr. So it certainly seems like we're one step closer to the reality, which I would have contended was always the reality that it's going to be Lamar Jackson under center for the Ravens this season. So let's take a look at that. That's a positive thing. Like we can be excited about this move for a moment.
It very much feels that way. And without wanting to like read into it too much, I've been waiting for this podcast so I can ask you this, because it seems crazy to me that Odell Beckham Jr., in spite of wanting to get paid and get his money, would be like, yeah, I'll take $15 million guaranteed to have Tyler Huntley throw me the football. Nothing against Tyler Huntley. Just like
I would take that.
I would take that too. I would take $15 million.
I don't care. You can throw me the ball. That's fine. Like I'll do that. I'm in.
But like I can't imagine OBJ making this deal unless he knows that Lamar is going to be there as a part of it. So they paid him a ton of money. Field, you have talked a bunch always about following the money. How are they going to use him? What does this deal mean for the Ravens in the way that you think that maybe they would utilize OBJ?
I think it's extremely likely to that you can just like read between the lines here. And I think you can accurately surmise that the most likely outcome for Lamar Jackson, and it has only increased in recent days, is that he's playing for the Ravens for 2023.
Right.
2024, I'm not prepared to cross that bridge yet. I think that it's still likely that he plays on a one-year deal via the franchise tag, because there's a big bridge that they have yet to gap that needs to be gapped between the Ravens and Lamar Jackson. If there wasn't that bridge, then they would have had this deal done months ago, maybe even years ago, who knows, or at least a year ago, because of course he's been eligible for the past 2 years to sign an extension. Positive vibes. And by the way, good for Lamar Jackson, because again, we'll see whether he's actually back on the field at the beginning of training camp. I would be surprised if he were out there for OTAs, maybe even mandatory mini camp in June, because until he signs that tender, he cannot be fined by the Baltimore Ravens. But at least it seems more likely that Lamar will be playing week one of this.
I will say this. I do expect him to be out there pretty early. Part of the reason is, you remember last year when there was a lot of chatter about him going to Dallas, and it looked like they wanted to acquire him for late in the season, a playoff push?
Sorry, I was saying Lamar in this case.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. OBJ. Sorry. We feel good about OBJ if I have BSF here now. I was talking about Lamar just from a contract standpoint.
I just wanted to see if everybody was paying attention. Yeah.
So I think
that'll be a theme throughout this show.
Lamar with the contract, it's hard to say for certain when he's going to be on the field, because he could hold out potentially for a game or games if he so decides. And the good vibes that are being felt right now go away because the Ravens don't make him a more substantial contract offer. All that aside here for a second, Mike, let's talk about the value of Odell Beckham Jr. In name alone, he's the most impactful player that has changed teams amongst the wide receivers so far this offseason. At the same time, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself as far as fantasy value goes. I decided not to look at where you have him ranked in your wide receiver rankings. I wanted to see, I figure there's a chance that we are in the same neighborhood, but where do you assess, or how do you assess OBJ for this upcoming season?
I have him first. You know him first? First overall?
Number,
like a little ahead of
Dynasty ranks
okay, way off. Yeah. Both.
Half PPR, number one. Second. Yeah.
I mean, there was a time where he was number one, right, in Dynasty rankings when he looked that guy, but it's been a while. I mean, did you realize the last regular season he was over six touchdowns was 2016.
Holy smokes.
2016. Yeah. That's the last time he was over.
Like 7 years ago?
That was, yeah, that's
been a while. Yeah,
that's been a while.
Crazy.
Now, look, in 2021, remember, he was traded, ended up on the Rams. He appeared in 18 games, including the playoffs. Yep. And if you just...
Most ever for him.
Yeah, and if you ignore the first half of that season and just focus on when he was on the Rams, and he had touchdowns, right? He had explosive plays for sure, and that offense was humming. It was terrific. He averaged 12.6 fantasy points per game in 12 games. That would have ranked 32nd at wide receiver last season. Yeah. So... Now he's in a lower volume pass offense. Assuming Lamar Jackson's there, they'll score points, but they're not going to throw it a ton, and Lamar's going to scramble a lot. We know that. You have Rashad Bateman there, who's going to have a big role. You have Mark Andrews, who's going to have a huge target share. We know that. And also, here's the thing. I totally buy that he could be fully healthy, 100% good to go. Let's just assume he is, okay? He turns 31 this year. We're talking about like DeAndre Hopkins, who's in that same age range, is a guy that could see a drop-off, right? So even a fully healthy OBJ, we're going to have some concerns about him missing time. We're seeing a drop-off in his ability, primarily plays on the perimeter, needs explosiveness. He's not really a high-volume, short-range target like a Keenan Allen, for example. So I have some concerns here.
Yeah.
But I do, to answer your question, I have him, I think of him like 47, something like that, right? So on a week-to-week basis, I think we'll rank him as probably in the wide receiver 3 flex conversation, but I have concerns about relying on him for a full season of high-end play.
I think those are all justified, especially based on the pattern. But if you go with sort of the recent positives, it's number one, he comes off a season where he played the most games that he played in his career, because you factor in the postseason. Number two, he has a year of not playing, so you get, you know, less bang on your body, and he comes in fresh. Number three, playing on a one-year deal and determined to prove something. So I think all those things work in his favor. He is a guy who, look, his posts right now are all about how nobody believes in him and all that. He's a chip on his shoulder guy. So, but he's also, as the mood elevates and declines, it's sort of his, I don't want to say effort, but sometimes his performance fluctuates with that. And he does have an injury history that's not insignificant. So 31 years old, it's going to be one of those where we're going to have the same conversation all the way to the start of the season, because you could have fantastic weeks and then you could have weeks that are dead, and he's certainly a candidate to miss time.
I have just one question.
Please.
When I look at Rashad Bateman, we're talking about this Ravens wide receiving core. Through his first two seasons, he has 800 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns. Yeah. Obviously, he's missed a ton of time, Stefania, because of injury. But when you're looking at this, Mike, are you projecting Rashad Bateman to still be the number one, or do you think that OBJ is going to be the guy that at the end of the year will likely have more targets per game than Rashad?
I have Bateman with a few more targets because I think Beckham misses a few games. I think you have to project it that way. I do think when they walk on the field week one, though, the primary target for Lamar Jackson will be Mark Andrews, number one. Number two will be Odell Beckham. The question is he going to play every down? Is he going to hold up for the whole season? Is he going to miss time? But I think this probably does take some pressure off Bateman. I think he is a really good prospect who has had some issues with durability and also with the previous regime, right? Mm-hmm. With Greg Roman. He obviously took some shots in social media. Roman's gone, of course. So
at the GM too, by the way, who's still there?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's exactly what it was, right? So I think that there's still hope for Bateman, and I think those two probably end up similar in targets by the end of the season, assuming no drastic injuries like missing 8 to 10 games.
All right, so on OBJ, I've got him as wide receiver 38 right now, and I think that what's important to note is that at some point in your wide receiver rankings, at any position ranking, it shifts from it's a matter of what you're looking for, right? Because there might be players that are ranked a few spots ahead of Odell Beckham Jr. Here's a good one as an example. Brandon Cooks, who I think the median outcome for Brandon Cooks this year is higher than the median outcome for Odell Beckham Jr. I think the top-end outcome for Odell Beckham Jr. is clearly higher than the top-end outcome for Brandon Cooks. So it may be that you get to a certain point in the draft and you're saying, you know what, I'm swinging for the fences. And OBJ has more swing for the fence potential than somebody like Brandon Cooks. But I hear the optimistic case for OBJ being Lamar Jackson is a unanimous MVP winner who led the NFL in passing touchdowns one season.
Yep.
Let's assume that he is back and playing like that old school version of Lamar Jackson, and he plays in a new offense where Todd Monken is now the coordinator and not Greg Roman. You need to go back to the 2 years where Lamar was at the peak of his powers and look at where they were in rush and passing attempts relative to the NFL, and just understand that, like, if they had 100 passing attempts, which would be about 5.5, 6 per game, they would still be like bottom three in the NFL in passing attempts. I don't think that a Todd Monken-led offense turns the Ravens into like the 16th pass-heaviest offense in the NFL. Yeah. They may have been there in the past couple of years because of the fact that everybody got hurt, and including Lamar Jackson, and they were playing from behind.
And they still weren't,
a bunch
though.
Of close games.
They still weren't.
They had 1 year, 2 years ago.
There was one
like
year,
16th,
one of the
right?
last 4 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that like the idea that Todd Monken takes them from like 32nd to like 12th, not buying it, right? Like,
agreed.
And maybe 32nd to like 22nd, and that could have a bit of an impact here. It's still going to be run heavy offense. And then beyond that is that Lamar, while he is a very, very talented passer, I think as far as like surgical throwers of the football go, if Odell Beckham Jr. is playing with Joe Burrow, I feel different about it, right? Yeah. If he's the number one in the Joe Burrow-led offense, I feel different about it. So I'm fired up for the Ravens. I'm fired up for OBJ, candidly, because it's an unbelievable deal. $15 million guaranteed for one season is exceptional for him.
The speculation was like maybe a third of that he would get.
It was a
shocker.
I'm telling you, there are stories every once in a while they hit, and people, rather than you having to reach out to people in the NFL, they immediately come to you, and people were jaw agape at the money being spent by the Baltimore Ravens, one of the most conservative, fiscally responsible teams in the league.
On not their quarterback position.
They rarely do these kind of moves. They're like,
well, maybe indirectly on their
Indirectly, this was a,
But it's like, this is so not Raven. That's not Raven, right? That's amazing. So respect to OBJ, but my expectations are a little more tepid relative to, I think, maybe some who are just excited about the possibility of OBJ being the number one target in a Lamar Jackson quarterbacked offense. Let's move to a piece that I recently wrote for ESPN. It's the top 10 or 10 of the top moves this offseason that have a fantasy impact.
It's a good article, Field. I want you to know that.
I read that. Appreciate you reading it, Daniel.
I went through it, and I noticed one thing missing specifically. Okay. I went through 1 through 10.
What'd you find?
I found that, like, you did not mention Gardner Minshew to the Colts.
Okay.
I thought that was suspicious.
That.
Kind of embarrassing.
Not only that, but I forgot that, and all due respect to Gardner Minshew, my
freaking
former
Craig
Halloween
Reynolds
costume.
Doesn't even get a mention.
I know. Well,
he got re-signed.
Yeah, exactly.
I was almost going to mention Craig Reynolds, and then he was number 11. Number 12 that I just completely whiffed on, so I'm owning it out of the gates here, is Darren Waller being traded to the New York Giants. If you're asking me how I whiffed, I don't have an answer. If I knew, I would tell you. But it hit me like a week after I wrote it. I was like, oh my God, I did not include Darren Waller to the Giants.
Well, when you're vacationing during free agency and, you know, what off with your kids and that, right. just not paying attention. I mean, this is what happens. You
this says to me,
typical Field behavior.
Have a little fun.
Field is actually human is what I hear from this. He's not the robot that we all thought he was.
Yeah. Or he just doesn't think much of Darren Waller.
No, you know, the interesting part is I have Darren Waller as a top 5 tight end in my ranks right now going into the season. Number 4 to be
spicy.
More specific. So here's what I think I'll do, is I'll just like kind of pass it around the table. I will read the move. Mike can read the most pertinent player and their rank and where he has him. I can also chime in with mine. And then we can kind of just talk about it. And we begin with Aaron Rodgers, who I know the move hasn't even become official yet, but Aaron Rodgers eventually going to the Jets. When a 4-time MVP gets traded, it has to be the most notable move of the offseason. We don't know what the compensation will be, but it'll almost assuredly be draft picks. Aaron Rodgers, Mike, where does he stack in your current preseason quarterback rankings.
Yeah, first of all, was it the Jets? Was it the Jets GM the other day said, "Yeah, we're getting Aaron Rodgers.
He's going
to
be here.
He's going to be here. Right? So we can like I have my projections are out there, and I have Rodgers on the Jets. Right? Some people get a little upset about that. We expect him to be there, barring some shocking development. So projecting him that way, I have him at QB 15 right now. Look, last year was a major step back, 25th in fantasy points per game, had never been worse than 13th before in his career. It was a huge drop off. Best weekly finish was 9th. It was rough. I get it. But he also dealt with a lot of drops. The supporting cast wasn't great. Doesn't add much value with his legs anymore. There's reasons to not expect him to get back into that top five conversation. But I do think the supporting cast will be a little bit better here. He'll be motivated to have a big season with his new team here. We saw Matthew Stafford do something like that a couple years ago.
Thank you.
It happened. Mm-hmm. So, Garrett Wilson's terrific. I'm sure we'll talk about him in a second. And they have a good core around him. And they might not be done, too, in terms of pass catchers, right?
They were almost going to sign Odell Beckham Jr. Exactly. Until he got $15 million from the Ravens.
Exactly. I'm sure, that's funny because I was going to mention that before. Like, they seemed like the favorite. And then I think it was one of them things where I can't pass on that money.
I think he was leaving there.
He was supposed to
go to the Jets.
Yeah.
And so they were like, you're not
I'll take
going
three times the salary to go anywhere.
Yeah.
OBJ was like, well, I'll play in the briefcases full of money for
you. Yeah. Well, I'll have to get on the next plane.
Yeah. And Baltimore this time of the year is gorgeous. I'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah.
I like, Mike, I agree with most everything you said. Obviously, it was a down year last season, but the floor had been so high for Rodgers in the years prior to that. I think more than anything, what I am buying into, and maybe this is just naive, but do you really think Aaron Rodgers, who seems to hear everything that is said about him, everything, mm-hmm. from all corners of the internet, right? Calling out reporters mm-hmm. by name mm-hmm. and mentioning fan push, like, Rodgers hears everything.
He's listening now.
He probably
like,
is.
This pod well, isn't even out
listening.
Right now. Yes. We're recording
he's
this.
Listening. He's
he can
been
hear.
Listening.
He has a feed direct
he's
to the
been
studio.
To the Focus for a long time, but... I just don't believe that Aaron Rodgers is going to go out with a whimper in his NFL career.
I tend to
and
agree.
He's year to year now. Like, part of the holdup in this trade is that the Jets don't want to fork over a first-round pick for a guy who could retire next year.
Right.
Who himself admitted 90% leaning towards retirement this offseason at one point. I think Aaron Rodgers bounces back. I've got him at quarterback 13. It's harder for me to go much higher than that mm-hmm. just because he has no value with his legs. And there are some really, really good quarterback options. But I think maybe the biggest winner in this trade, Daniel, is actually Garrett Wilson, the wide receiver.
Totally. And I want to say really quickly about Aaron Rodgers, just so super fast, if that's okay.
Take your time.
Aaron Rodgers played 18 seasons in the NFL. 13 of those seasons, he's played at least 15 games. So I'm just trying to get down to the seasons where he hasn't missed time. Mm. Last year was his second most interceptions ever in a season and his second fewest touchdowns ever mm-hmm. in a season.
Yeah.
The idea that Aaron Rodgers, after 18 years, is going to potentially leave Green Bay and go to a new team, I absolutely believe, as much as I don't want to believe this, that he's going to bring everything that he absolutely has. There's something that he's going to bring to this Jets team, because I agree with you, Field. He doesn't want to go out with a whimper. Last year sucked for him.
It was a stacked a bunch of adverse events, right? So, mm-hmm. and the fact that he didn't really have the receivers, that was clear coming in, and he was grumpy about that. Then he broke his thumb, and he wasn't the same. And even though he...
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza, better because it has to be.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
He didn't really complain about it. In fact, he tried to hide it, but then sort of let us know it was bothering him. It definitely affected the way he was playing.
Absolutely. And now, like you said, Field, being able to have a guy like Garrett Wilson this last season, Garrett Wilson, 83 catches, 1,100 receiving yards, only 4 touchdowns. I'm hoping that 4 touchdowns goes up, but he had 148 targets. This kid is unbelievable. And if he can have somebody not named Joe Flacco or Zach Wilson throwing him the football like Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. Or Mike White. Yeah.
Or Mike Clay. Mike, how sure. high is that going to potentially like push Garrett Wilson up, understanding that like we are expecting Aaron Rodgers, even if he's quarterback 15 or quarterback 13, it's going to be a huge boost for this value of this offense.
Right. He had a 25% target share as a rookie last season. That was sixth highest at wide receiver. He finished 21st in fantasy points. I have him at 13th, right? If he sees a target share similar to that with a much better quarterback, and not to mention another year of experience in the NFL, he should be able to make a leap. He could be one of the next elite fantasy wide receivers for sure. So I feel very, very good about him next year. I will say this, though, by the way, just for this offense, something to think about all the AFC East teams is I think four of the best defenses in the NFL might be in one division. Miami is stacked.
That's
they got Jalen Ramsey.
This is so fun when we were picking the over-under on the wins in that division. Every time I think, oh, this offense is revamped, I'd be like, ooh, look who they're playing on defense.
Yeah, Patriots are always good. The Bills are good.
Miami.
And by the way, the Jets having a good defense is not –
it changed the way they played offense
last
year.
They're going to be able to run the ball more. They're not going to have to chuck it around as much. So all things to consider here when you're thinking about a guy like Rodgers or any of these pass catchers.
I've got Wilson at wide receiver 11. It's hard for me to make the case for him to be that much lower. This guy could easily break into the top 10 for scoring this year based off of how he performed last year with terrible quarterback play. But you're right, Mike. I will say this. I just mentioned how I think Aaron Rodgers is going to bounce back. That's like the angel on my shoulder. Mm-hmm. The devil on my shoulder is like, what if the NFL schedule makers say, hey, first three games for the Jets this year, Buffalo, Philadelphia, Miami, which, by the way, all those games are on their schedule this year. Right. The Chiefs might be as well. What if those are their first four games, which when you have Aaron Rodgers, they're probably going to start. Well, it'd be fun, right? But like, what if they're 0-4 after four games and all of a sudden Aaron Rodgers is like,
oh, it'd be so good.
I'm sorry, Jets fans. It would be amazing, right? But it's just like, there are like the way that the narrative changes and that Rodgers' temperament might change is if this team is just straight up struggling, which I think they're going to be pretty good next year. I'm not suggesting that they won't be good, but we saw it. Like, we've seen teams who was it last year who like famously had like the first four games of their season were just like the absolute worst portion of their schedule.
And then
it was
they won everything.
Like, wow. Like, okay, this team
who
is.
Who was that?
Might have been 2 years ago where I think it was like Cleveland or somebody who came out of the gates and it was like Chiefs, Ravens, like two other like really good teams back to back. And you're like, dang, what is this team? Right? Like, I don't know, like this team, and then they like ended up evening out and being about what you'd expect from them. But the schedule early can certainly impact how things go for the rest of the season. Other side of this is Aaron Rodgers being traded away from the Packers. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that, Mike. Did Jordan Love? He cracked my quarterback rankings all the way at quarterback. I got to scan down the document.
22. All right.
I mean,
feeling a little optimistic there.
It's a tough one though, because so quarterback 22 for me, Jordan Love. You can't point to anything in the pros, Mike, but what you can point to is the college tape. And the trick with Jordan Love is that, I don't know, like maybe you'd assume that stylistically he's different from Aaron Rodgers, but like, he is as average can be as an athlete. He has zero rushing upside as a quarterback in college. Quarterback rushing stats can be a bit tricky because they include yards lost by sacks, but like, no rushing upside here for Jordan Love. And we have no idea what he is as a passer and who's he throwing to.
Yeah, we don't know how good he is. You remember his final season in college wasn't so good. It was the year before that he really broke out, and then he had kind of the step back his final season. And again, he's barely seen the field behind Rodgers the last few seasons. You're right. I can't get too excited about taking a lottery ticket on him with a late pick as a QB2 because he doesn't offer much with his legs. So even if he does pan out and he's an above average passer, by the way, with a really shaky supporting cast as things stand right now, look at that Packers group of tight ends and receivers. It is not good after Christian Watson. They have major holes to fill in that unit. So it's really hard
Christian
for me.
What about Christian Watson, though?
I mean, behind him.
Does he count? Yeah. I mean, I know you say behind him, but like Christian Watson really struggled the second half of the year. Of Christian Watson's...
Was it?
Oh, yes, you're right. Christian Watson really struggled to begin the season, and then all seven of his touchdowns came in like four games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
So, like,
he looks good. I mean, I still feel good about him because they manufactured touches for him. He was carrying the ball as well. And right now, I have him ranked really high. I think I'm wide receiver 20. I could go as high as 15 because, again, where are they throwing the ball?
Even like, right now, Jordan Love under center.
Obvious. They just strike me as the most obvious use a first round pick on a wide receiver, which, by the way, would be so ironic if it happens the year after they
spend
Aaron
a first
Rodgers,
and a third or something.
Right?
Yeah.
Because this was like for Hopkins. Wasn't it like after Rex Ryan got fired by the Jets, they spent like all this money on defensive free agents, and Rex had been clamoring for that for years. But yeah, I think Garrett Wilson's a big winner from the Jets side. And I'm not sure who, if there's any winner for the Packers, like I expect the running backs to be kind of like how the running backs have been in prior years. Mm-hmm. And as far as the pass catchers go, I'm with Mike. I have a little bit less optimism on Christian Watson, not really because of Christian Watson, but really because like it's really hard to find wide receivers to put him ahead of. Like some of the wide receivers that are in that same range that you're talking about, Mike, like wide receiver 20 on my board, Tyler Lockett, 21, Amari Cooper, right? Like 25, Jerry Jeudy. Like these are names that we've seen more of, and like it's not like pedigree is the issue with those players ahead of Christian Watson. I kind of view them all fairly comparably, like wide receivers that aren't, like I don't want to walk into the season with them as my wide receiver one, but if you hit the flush with running backs early and end up with one of those guys as your first wide receiver, there are worse ways to build a roster.
And by the way, Watson outscored probably all of those guys you just mentioned, maybe not Jeudy in the final, you know, during that hot streak. He was wide receiver 10 down the stretch, and efficiency-wise, basically top 10 in every category.
Yeah.
I mean, he might be legit. He might be a star receiver.
He had one
who sees a ton of volume.
Yeah. One game that's with more than five catches last year.
Yeah, like, it was a really low volume season for him. Yeah.
It started to pick up, though. I remember I picked on him a lot because of the touchdown regression, and then the volume started to come. The target share was there. They were just running the ball a lot. So.
And if they aren't as good next year, which I know they weren't great last year, but if this is like a 6-11 team next year, they'll be throwing the football more than they were this past
season. Yeah, and by the way, the quarterback situation, we all can all agree, probably going to be a downgrade. Aaron Rodgers is great, but they weren't. It's not like they were lighting up last year. They're not going from peak Aaron Rodgers to, you know, a terrible quarterback situation. They're going from like a below average scoring offense to Jordan Love. So, and obviously Watson survived that last year.
A few more moves to move through, and Tom Brady retired. Have you guys heard that or no?
What?
Did hear that.
Did he
retire? He is still retired. Okay. And the Buccaneers have signed, subsequently, Baker Mayfield. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to ask, so I think, Stefania, one of the big themes of this year's rankings is going to be accounting for injuries and accounting for ACL tears much more than I think. I need to overcorrect. I got too optimistic on players that were coming off of ACL tears, especially early on in the season. Mm-hmm. That being said, Stefania, there was one guy who seemed to look closer to himself than any other guy coming off of an ACL tear. And that was Chris Godwin, who it wasn't perfect. And he got injured like the second he got back on the field in week one. But from like week four on, he kind of looked like Chris Godwin, at least like 75-85% of the way.
Yeah, he had more of the trajectory you kind of expect to see in that first year back, where a player kind of starts to look and feel like their pre-injury self when they get to the back half of the season. And everything in training camp suggested that Chris Godwin was going to be close to on time. The fact that he started when he did, I think, you know, just reflected that, but he had a hamstring injury. Remember, he kind of went to catch an awkward pass. And so that's the kind of play where you go, well, that could have happened whether or not he had the ACL injury coming into the season. It wasn't like, oh, he pulled up running and he was deconditioned from it. So it was one of those things where, you know, people were wondering, should he have been in that long? Who is to say? It's hard to necessarily put the two together, but it is something that we see fairly often where guys have these soft tissue injuries post-ACL. That said, once he came back, he really looked pretty good, and I would expect him to be that much better coming into this year.
So let's talk about expectations going into the season, Mike, because I get it. Mike Evans was not great last season. Mm-hmm. And Chris Godwin, even mostly staying healthy, was not great as far like he saw a dramatic dip in his yards per reception. He was mostly
only three
volume
touchdowns,
based, right?
Yeah,
three
right.
touchdowns. This was all volume based. Mm-hmm. And yet both of them were top 15 scorers on a points per game basis this past season. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about them going into this year. Whether you think it's Kyle Trask or Baker Mayfield, I can't imagine either of them is being drafted where they have been for the past 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, so there's two things here. First of all, so you mentioned top 15 in points per game. That's true. 13th for Evans, 15th for Godwin, right? So that's kind
it's
of a starting point.
It's amazing that Evans is ahead, but 13. One game.
Right, right. So again, a little outside the top 12, right? Think about how we think of these guys, right? Probably like fringe wide receiver ones during the Tom Brady era.
Yeah.
You're going to have the big quarterback downgrade. That's huge, yep. right? They could have one of the worst quarterback situations in the NFL. And the other thing is, Tom Brady literally set an NFL record for pass attempts 2 years ago. I mean, that was an extremely high volume pass offense. That's going way down.
That was actually last year, right?
Was the record last year? Or was the,
maybe it was most completions ever last year.
Yeah, I think it was completions last year, attempts the year before. But or second most attempts ever was 2 years ago. Nonetheless,
yep.
An extremely pass-heavy, high-volume offense, tons of plays, all those things. So you have that change. They're not going to throw the ball that much with Baker and Mayfield, and it's just going to be it's going to be a different-looking offense for sure. So that could cost that offense 100 pass attempts, and the quarterback's not going to be as good. Also, Mike Evans was extremely inconsistent last year. He was outside the top 30 in 60% of his games. He turns 30 years old this season.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, like even with Brady, Godwin scored 3 touchdowns. So if our starting point in that situation was 13th and 15th, you have to drop them down. You can't put them in that same number. So I have one of the hardest pair of guys to rank. I have them 26th for Godwin, 30th for Evans. That is,
wow.
It feels painfully low. Yeah. But remember, look at the other guys in that range. Wide receiver is stacked, and this situation is not great in Tampa Bay. That roster, especially offensively, does not look good. I have serious concerns. I don't want either guy on my fantasy team as of right now.
I've got Godwin a little bit higher because the volume is going to be insane again. Look at the rest of their pass catchers. I've got him at 22, but Evans at 29. Also important to note, Mike, that despite the fact that Mike Evans finished 13th in points per game last year, 35% of his points came in just 2 games. I get it. If you remove a couple of players, a couple of games from every player's ledger, their outlook looks different. That week, was it 16, 17 explosion? It was in the playoffs.
The 2 weeks that you didn't get to use him
actually
exactly.
Yes. Mike Evans was great last year, and Brady Jackson confirms led the NFL and set an NFL record both in terms of completions and attempts last season.
There you go.
Two hard guys to assess coming into the season because you know that if for some reason Kyle Trask is way better than we all believe he is right now, this would be a good offense. Those two players are stone cold ballers. Let's go to number 8 on my moves, and it was the carousel of running backs in the NFC North. And I'm going to go to you here, Daniel, to start because your Lions saw Jamal Williams walk away, and they added a familiar face in David Montgomery. If you were to assess how this running back backfield shakes out in Detroit right now, who's the man? Who's the complimentary piece? Or is it not like that?
Craig Reynolds is the man, obviously.
Obviously. Kutztown's finest.
Kutztown's finest. No, I think that David Montgomery is the guy here. I follow, not only just following the contract, we've talked about this, but DeAndre Swift has not proven, unfortunately, that he can stay healthy through the first couple of years of his career.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to see him be able to utilize, the Lions specifically, utilize a guy like David Montgomery to be able to be a better pass-catching back than what Jamal Williams was. I think that David Montgomery being a little bit younger, too, he, if I remember correctly, he had more yards after first contact than Jamal Williams, and he had fewer yards before first contact than Jamal Williams. So, like, he's in a much better spot here in this Lions offense than Jamal was. So it's very definitely, I would take David Montgomery first between those two running backs. I would have him at running back 18. I have DeAndre Swift at running back 21 so far this year. And I love both of them, but I don't have that same... I was high on DeAndre Swift coming in last year, thinking of what they were going to do for him, that pass-catching ability. And adding a guy like David Montgomery, who also has that pass-catching ability, and seeing that Swift had problems staying on the field, I would rather have David Montgomery. Tell me if you feel differently,
I have
Mike.
Swift a little higher, almost the exact opposite of you. And here's what's incredible. So I have Swift at 19. He has never finished a season worse than 19th in points per game.
That's crazy.
I mean, even with all the missed time and leaving games early and being severely limited at times and not getting all those touchdowns that Jamal Williams had, still delivering RB2 numbers at worst with this limited role because he's so effective. He's effective as a rusher. Yeah. He's had at least 7 touchdowns every season, and he has a big role in the passing game. And by the way, Montgomery, I think he'll play. He's basically going to step into the Jamal Williams role. Won't score as many touchdowns. I mean, Williams had 28 carries inside the 5 last season.
38.
Inside the 5. He had 20.
Oh, inside the 5. Okay.
No one else had more than 20.
Sure.
He had 8 more than any other player in the league. So Montgomery's going to pick up a lot of that. I do think he'll see more passing game work than Williams, but probably not by a ton because that's when DeAndre Swift is going to be on the field. So I like them both, though. I mean, my short answer is I like them both. I think they're both top 25 fantasy options, and we're going to be starting most
that goal line usage. That's what gets me, though.
Well, I say a couple things here. Is that I took the easy way out. I ranked them back to back.
Stop
Swift,
it.
22, Montgomery, 23. But this comes back to something I brought up earlier. What do you need? What do you want? if you're looking for the player that week in and week out will probably get you, you know, 10 to 12 points, draft David Montgomery.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a player that you can kind of trust his role week in and week out, draft David Montgomery, at least for right now, because I do want to introduce a thought about DeAndre Swift in a second. But if you're looking for a player who, if, and I've decided the term that I'm going to use, I was inspired by Jamal Williams, the royal flush outcome, where like almost everything goes right for the player. If you think the royal flush outcome is possible for DeAndre Swift, that's top 10 running back upside. That's what it can be. I'd be surprised if it were that for David Montgomery with the roster broken down as it currently is. That's why I have him ranked as such. But I do wonder, is DeAndre Swift on this team week one of the NFL season?
Mm-hmm. Wonder that too.
That to me seems like the elephant in the room here, because $6 million per year for David Montgomery, second biggest contract handed out to a running back. You exclude franchise tags. Only Miles Sanders got more money. And by the way, they let Jamal Williams walk away like a heart and soul guy. Like, they felt like they needed an upgrade at their lead back role. Maybe a team that just traded away, as an example, Jeff Okuda. Like, these GMs, sunk cost, right? Like, not only did Brad Holmes, their GM, not draft DeAndre Swift, but who cares whether you drafted him first or last in the draft? If you can get some value back on him, or you don't think he's worth the price it is currently costing you or will cost you in the future, I don't know. It just strikes me as an interesting name to keep an eye on.
By the way, did
Cowboys.
The Chiefs.
That is a good place for him to go, is the Cowboys. Hey, Jerry Jones, if you're listening, go get DeAndre Swift, because I think he could thrive in that offense. It helps them out with the Tony Pollard situation.
Yep.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
I love this.
I like
Kansas
City. I want
to see that happen.
Kansas City.
By the way, the Chiefs used a pick two slots ahead of where DeAndre Swift went on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Sorry, Chiefs fans, you've got two Super Bowls in 4 years. You can admit that every once in a while, you do have, like, you're allowed one blunder in like 7 years.
By the way, it's
permissible.
Did you catch Mel Kiper's last mock draft?
I did. Bijan Robinson.
I'm going to say this
right now. If the Lions get Will Anderson Jr. and Bijan Robinson in the first round, I'm going to be.
That's not fair.
Don't even come try to talk to me. I'm partying the entire weekend.
Do they have one of the best O-lines too?
Really? Is there something like that? Honestly, I want to ask you really quickly. You said 28 carries inside the five. I have 38 goal to go carries, which is yours is more indicative of that. If David Montgomery is going to get that role, that's part of why I have a hard time seeing DeAndre Swift any higher than that. I don't see DeAndre Swift being a goal line guy. So when you talk Jamal Williams had 38 goal to go carries. The next highest person in the NFL was Jalen Hurts with 23.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So he far and away was that guy. Jalen Hurts is a very good running back. So it just feels like to me that aspect of it, knowing that it's not just those goal line carries, but the fact that he's not Jamal Williams and he can catch the ball. He had 30 plus catches last year. That to me is like what gives me that little bit of an edge, just because I don't see DeAndre Swift being that guy that's even going to get 8-10 touchdowns this year.
It probably won't be as dramatic, where it's like when Jamal Williams is in, he is going to run the ball and not catch. And when DeAndre Swift is in, he is just as prone to catch as he is run. He had just three games with 10 rushing attempts or more last season. But I still think that Swift's pass-catching upside, even if he's not a full-time player, just represents so much value. As you're going through your rankings, you just go back and look at the top 20, either by points per game or by overall points last year at running backs, and it's like, oh, other than like Derrick Henry and Jamal Williams, they all catch a lot of passes. It just raises the floor so dramatically.
And just remember, make sure you have a backup.
The Lions scored 501 fantasy points, their running back room. That was most in the NFL last season. There's plenty of room here for both of those guys to be fantasy starters.
Yep.
It's not that he couldn't do it functionally from what they're trying to do. It's the fit thing. It's just, I saw it in Hard Knocks. I watched. Tell me if I'm wrong, but the whole Dan Campbell, I think they wanted DeAndre Swift to be something that he didn't quite end up being. And even his comments after the season of like, we had this plan, it didn't quite work out, and we're going to kind of try and start over and see if we can, we still have plans for him. We're going to see if we can make it work. The durability thing is a problem for them, and I think they want him to run hard, and that's not his That's not his style.
Yeah. Well, and Deuce Staley now with the Carolina Panthers. So maybe the new running backs coach feels a bit differently about how the rotation works there in Detroit, but we shall see. I think we all have a similar view on this backfield. Let's go to the NFC North. The other NFC North team that saw a pretty dramatic shakeup in their backfield, which is, of course, the Bears, because we just talked about David Montgomery now being a Lion. They went the more, I would say, fiscally responsible route at running back this offseason. They signed Deontay Foreman to a one-year deal worth up to $3 million. They did add Travis Homer for a two-year deal. I think it's worth up to $4 million. Homer, special teams player, too. He's a running back, but he'll play his most valuable snap for them on special teams. And all of a sudden, Mike, I'm having a hard time figuring out if there's really any value in the Chicago Bears backfield.
Okay, I don't like it.
Okay.
I don't like it. I mean, I like the...
Who's the highest ranked running back amongst Bears running backs, and how high is he ranked for you?
I do have Herbert higher because I think someone has to be out there when they're throwing the football.
I've got him running back 37.
I'm at 32 for Herbert. I'm at 51 for Foreman. If you wanted to put them a little tighter, I'm okay with it. Yeah. Foreman is a good player. Remember, he was a high pedigree player out of Texas, came into the league, had an Achilles, and he missed a substantial amount of time, came back, kind of resurrected his career after time out of the league. And now he's pretty good. I mean, he's seen
a ton.
Had
the best year of his career last year.
Yeah, a ton of box defenders the last 2 years. He replaced Derrick Henry 2 years ago in Tennessee when he was hurt last year, replaced Christian McCaffrey when he was traded, and was terrific. The thing about him, though, is he's not going to catch the football. He has 23 catches in 43 games in his career. He's going to be a non-factor there, so he might score some touchdowns. He's going to lose some of them to Justin Fields, who's going to run them in. It's going to hurt his fantasy output. It's good for the team, not good for fantasy. And Khalil Herbert, look, everyone has wanted him to happen for 2 years now, and every time David Montgomery comes back from his injury, Herbert disappears and gets four touches. You know what I mean? Now, he started to eat in a little bit late last season, but I'm not so sure that the Bears are really buying into him as a feature back, so I expect at least a two-headed committee. They might not be done at running back. Let's see what happens in the draft.
Completely agree.
And also, Homer, in obvious passing situations, he might steal some targets. Right?
How about this? Combined receiving for Herbert and Deontay Foreman last year, combined, a total 14 catches for 83 yards on 21 targets.
That's not a lot of fans.
How many games did they miss? A lot of games? Did they play full seasons? No, how many games played?
I think both of them played a lot.
Played basically full seasons.
Even if it's half a season each, like if you combine them to make 17 games, that would be minimal passing game utilization. I'm a little higher on Deontay Foreman than Mike. And it goes back to, again, this thing that we were talking about, like what exactly do you need at a running back? And I think I'm realizing this more and more as every year goes by, is that it's not that I think Deontay Foreman every single week is going to give you something you really need, but like if there might be a pocket of games where it's like Deontay Foreman is getting 20 plus touches in five straight games, even if they're all rushes, and you're like, oh, okay. Like this is a player that has some value week in and week out. So I've got him as running back 39 on my board because, like Mike said, he's a good runner, man. He's a talented dude. And this offense ran the ball well last year, albeit a lot of it with Justin Fields. They'll be able to run the football effectively again this season. I think they'll score more touchdowns, obviously, than they did last year,
too. I want to ask you a question, which is not on our show list, Field.
Please,
but
it's okay.
In talking about these NFC North running backs, obviously Khalil Herbert staying there after David Montgomery left to sort of take over that, you know, co-lead back role.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised that in Minnesota, Alexander Mattison didn't choose to go somewhere else rather than continue to back up Dalvin Cook.
He got real money, though. So, but that's a good. It's another one. So that's another one that feels like it wouldn't stun me if there's a second shoe to drop there. Right, because for those who missed it, as Daniel referenced, 2 years, I think it's $8 million with $7 guaranteed for Alexander Mattison.
That's a good amount of money.
It's not blow you away money, but it's also not nothing, right? It's that's not like pure backup money. And Mike, last year, he was more of a backup than he had been during the Mike Zimmer era. He basically was a pure backup for Minnesota.
That's because Dalvin Cook appeared in 17 games for the first time ever.
Yep.
He's never done that before. So he was there, and that meant Mattison disappears. Now, Mattison, when Cook missed time, was basically, I mean, there was a stretch where he was the number one scoring running back in fantasy. He was really good in that role, but he wasn't even that as good last year. He took a step back in terms of efficiency, and I think that probably softened his market a little bit. But
gotcha.
You're right. I mean, we're keeping an eye, I think, on Dalvin Cook and Joe Mixon as well to see if they end up on those week one rosters.
No two ways about that. All right, you know what? Rather than talking about Brandon Cooks, who I kind of mentioned earlier, and like I think it's a fine move. I thought it was a good move for the Cowboys. Liked it a lot, but I have him as wide receiver 35. It's not like I'm blown away by the prospects there in fantasy.
I think he'll be a flex. I think we'll be starting him as a flex every week. He's a really good player, and he's not going to have as much pressure on him, but that's going to be a it's look, we picked on Mike McCarthy, and they want to score less, and there's They're still going to throw it enough. It's still a really good offensive line. They have good targets. They're going to score points, and Cooks is going to be a big part of that.
All right, so again, a lot of things to dive into in this article. It's on ESPN Plus if you want to go read it right now. And as I've been doing my rankings, I'm more and more intent, and like I'm holding myself to this. We're talking tiers this year, people. Mm-hmm. We are talking categories. Oh, we're talking buckets.
Always.
Because as you're, but no, we haven't always, though, right? Like people get so fixated on Terry McLaurin, just as an example, right? Terry McLaurin or Tyler Lockett, who do you like more? Both? Yes. I like them both, right? Like, I don't want to waste time on that kind of argument nearly as much this offseason. I want to dive deeper into why those players can represent comparable value in your drafts and on your rosters. As always, check out Mike on Twitter, Mike Clay NFL. He is at Daniel Dopp. She is at Stefania underscore ESPN. We are back later this week, and we get this request a lot. We're doing it. We're going to talk about various different types of leagues that you can play on ESPN. Do not miss it. We'll talk to you guys on Thursday.
If you need a stick of Tide, Field is your guy. If you're in Bristol or in Farmington, you should find another ride. Candidly, he hates Mike Clay. And you know that it's a fact. Every Yater's gonna Yate. Cause he's on TV every day. A spicy tomato who's got the stats and tweets that'll make you laugh. He's our favorite host and everybody knows his name. He's Fieldy.